Welcome to Hit the Bottle Podcast, a show for beverage sales and marketing professionals looking to up their game and further their careers and businesses. Viewed through the lens of strategy, technology, and leadership, we explore everything from digital marketing, e-commerce, brand building, public relations, and much more. Each week, we chat with industry experts and leaders, explore practical applications, and discuss what's happening in our world. Our goal is to provide you with the insights and strategies you need to create successful marketing programs. Now it's time to hit the bottle.
Hello, and welcome to Hit the Bottle Podcast. This is Michael Wainbickler, your host. And of course, I'm joined by my partner in crime, the Kamala to my Joe, Miss Emma Criswell.
Hello.
Hi, Emma. So today we're actually doing kind of a solo podcast. It's just Emma and I, and we're going to talk today about international wineries and beverage producers who would like to have a better presence in the United States. We work with a lot of international clients at Balzac, and this is something we've done for almost 30 years now. So we have quite a few kind of key takeaways for international wineries and beverage producers who are interested in selling their wines in the U.S. So today, I think we'll kick it off with some of the things that Em and I think are important to consider before selling wines in the U.S. So where we'd start is with distribution. So first of all, you know, if you're an international producer, you obviously have to have an importer or two or three
or seven
in the U.S. or seven, depending on where you are and, you know, the markets that you want to cover. It's important that the wines are here in the U.S. You know, before you start any kind of marketing program, you know, often enough times we're approached by clients who are interested in the U.S. market, but they don't actually have a presence here yet. So it actually makes it pretty much impossible for us to actually do work with them. So Emma, I mean, you've worked with many international clients, both here and elsewhere. And so what are your thoughts regarding distribution and, you know, some of the thoughts that people should think about when looking at that?
Yeah, I mean, I've been on both sides of it, and I feel like definitely reaching out to something like a U.S. agency in the beginning to say, we're not distributed, do you have any thoughts on that, is a good thing, especially if you're not in the U.S. all that much, because there are just so many different laws in different states, and it doesn't always make sense to be in every single state to start out with. You know, that gets really expensive, and there are a lot of paperwork on the back end there. So, I mean, having the conversation of where you want the wines to be is always a good first step. And then you can interview distributors. I mean, it might not always be a good fit.
Yeah. You know, and to that point, you know, I think that there's generally kind of two schools of thought for international producers. And what I suggest is that actually that somewhere in the middle. So the two kind of distributors that that international producers often look for are like the big boys. So, you know, Southern and Republic, you know, they're hoping that, you know, by having a large distribution company that they'll have a greater reach. Which at its heart, it makes sense. However, the fact is that, you know, especially if you're on the smaller side as a producer, you're just not going to get the attention from those folks because they've got literally thousands, thousands and thousands of SKUs in their book, and they have no reason to actually sell your wines, you know, unless you give them one. And then the other way that a lot of international producers choose to come into the US is going through small distributors and importers. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're like specialty distributors. Maybe they specialize in Hungarian wine, for instance.
Right.
And, you know, maybe like a mom and pop shop. And the problem with those sorts of distributors and importers is that they don't have the same kind of reach that some of the larger distributors do. And often of times what happens is you find yourself in kind of niche locations. So, you know, let's say you're a Spanish producer and you want to import into the US and you're going with a importer that specializes in Spanish wines. Great. You know where your wines are going to end up in? Spanish restaurants. Right.
In the city where the distributor is.
Yeah, exactly. Which is great if that's all you want. But if you want to have greater reach, then you need to consider something in between those two types of distributorship. So, you know, there's more kind of regional distributorships, which maybe they specialize in one particular state. You know, we work with a company called IDN, which is, what does it stand for, Emma? Independent Distributor Network.
Right.
Independent Distributor Network.
This is why I'm the head of client relations.
Yes, exactly right. I'm the brains of the operation if you can't figure it out. So they specialize in working with more regional family-owned distributorships in this kind of collective that they've developed. So, you know, that's a possible option for folks. But, you know, the one thing is that I think there's a perception by many international clients of ours that if they get a distributor signed up, that their work is done.
Yes, right. And there's a lot more that goes into it. You know, you have to, especially if you're at a smaller distribution house, you have to come to the market. You have to remind them that you are part of the book. You have to have education, staff education, and it takes a lot of work and it takes a lot of focus. And it's with the pandemic, you know, I feel like that's why this is such a good topic for us to discuss right now, is because you can't physically be here to do the work withs and the ride alongs and the tasting events that so often get people to purchase your wine. So you have to think outside the box now.
True. When we do get back to normal, hopefully that, you know, I assume that that's going to kind of pick up again, because there really is no substitute for meeting face to face with potential clients.
Absolutely. Not.
And the fact is that as an international producer, you can't expect your distributor or your importer is going to do the work for you. Mm. In fact, you're going to have to be here in market when you're able to help them to sell your wines. It's just the reality of the situation.
Yeah.
But that said, as to your point, you know, not right now, you know, people can't travel here or, you know, we can't travel elsewhere as well. So, you know, we're looking at things like brand building exercises to help promote the wines here in the US. That could include things like digital, social. Mm-hmm. You know, right now, because we're not able to meet face to face, you know, it makes sense for people to focus on some of the digital aspects of what they do and leverage those.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like one of my favorite things I've seen come out of the pandemic is Instagram Lives with people in the trade, like, you know, Jeff Harding or people, the other SOMs who have been out of work but are brilliant people and they know all the winemakers and they're giving them the opportunity to be in their vineyard and show us that they're pruning and show us that they're, you know, doing the crush or what they're bottling. And it's an opportunity to reach not only the audience of that person's, you know, Instagram, Facebook, what have you, it also is an opportunity to save that for the future and show that to consumers if you wanted to repackage it in some specific way or put it into your email campaigns. And it just gives another opportunity for video which we always recommend clients have the budget for video anyway.
Here's a message from our sponsor. Yeah, nowadays, you know, video is becoming more and more important to our marketing programs because, you know, if a picture is worth 1,000 words, a video is worth 1,000,000. So, you know, you can convey a lot of information in a very short period of time, and you can do it visually, which is a huge advantage, especially, you know, considering that there's so many other wineries out there that are trying to, you know, court the same people.
Right.
So, you know, using some of these digital programs helps you to engage with your customers more directly. You know, you don't have to rely on the distributor or the importer to be your connection with your customers. You can actually use these tools to have more direct contact. And that includes social, it includes website, it also includes email marketing. You know, we're big proponents of email marketing and how effective that can be. And then, you know, you had mentioned before we hopped on, Emma, about, you know, more samples.
Yeah. Another thing that we can do is we have a lot of good contacts at the media and the magazines that put out all of the scores, you know, and that is where it can get really important to consumers, especially like consumers, not like you and I are consumers, but, you know, somebody who works at the post office or what have you.
Right. Yeah, we are not the market.
No, no.
We know entirely way too much about wine.
Yeah, I've gone into wine shops and been told, oh, you're being shady. You're acting like you don't know anything about this industry when you're asking me questions. It's really funny. Especially being in Columbus, just seeing the other side of it is hysterical. But it also gives me some really great insight that I can give to our clients. But circling back to sample submissions and getting in front of the media, like larger grocery stores that rely very heavily on scores and critics and media reviews, put those out on their shelves. And grocery stores are where the majority of the wine is being purchased right now. Even people aren't going to restaurants and people don't want to go to a specific wine shop, or maybe their wine shop isn't open, tasting rooms haven't been open. That's a way that you can give a lot of your information to a consumer without them having to ask a lot of questions or feel intimidated.
Well, to that point, you know, if you have good reviews and scores, it makes it a lot easier to sell your products to distributors, you know, because the distributor, they've got, like I said, they've got thousands of SKUs in their book. You know, what is going to make you stand out is a good score, right? Because that's it's, you know, it's easier for them to sell the product if they're well regarded.
Yep. And one thing we do a lot of times for clients is we put together both a press and a sales kit, and we update the accolades in the sales kit, and we can just send those off to whatever distributor our clients want us to send them to. And it's another way to be more top of mind there.
Well, to that point, you know, press kit, sales kit, those are materials that we create for our clients, you know, but it's important for all of these producers to have educational materials, background materials that they can share with not only, you know, the distributors, but also with the marketplace in general. Because again, you know, there's only so much you can garner from the label of a wine, and
sometimes you can't garner anything.
Right. You know, so, I mean, if you're on a grocery store shelf, you know, there's not much opportunity there to differentiate yourself from your competitors. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if you are engaging with consumers online, you're doing sample tastings, you're getting those reviews. Those are ways for you to connect with your potential client. Mm-hmm. You know, I often say that wine doesn't sell wine, stories sell wine.
Yes.
You know, and it's important for you to have something, a story behind you that will differentiate you from your competitors, but also, you know, interest the party, whether that's a, you know, high-end sommelier, whether it's a, you know, retail manager, or, you know, it's a consumer. Mm-hmm. You know, you should have a story that can be told that's engaging and will interest people to purchase the wines.
Right.
Because if all they wanted was wine, you know, they can buy a $2 bottle and that's it. But if,
yeah, exactly.
You know, wine is an aspirational product, right? So, you know, we're often looking for that kind of luxury in a bottle, you know, affordable luxury.
Yeah.
You know, so wine delivers on that in many ways. So, okay. So let's say you're an international producer and you want to break into the U.S. market. You don't have a distributor yet. You don't have an importer yet. Or maybe you do, and you maybe you've just started with them and you need to get the word out about things. You know, what do you do as a producer? Well, I would say you hire us. Yeah. I mean, hire an agency, right? You know, it's one of those things where, you know, we're the experts in this marketplace. We have the connections, we have the relationships, we know what's going on,
right?
In the U.S. market. So as an international producer, having somebody who's an expert in the market is, if not critical, it is quite important. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it just makes things a lot easier and more profitable in the long run, honestly.
Yeah.
Because if you're spending all your time spinning your wheels trying to make inroads into the U.S. market without much success, a local agency can really help you in that regard.
Absolutely. And even if it's something as simple as kind of updating the language to U.S. vernacular, even if it is coming from an English-speaking country elsewhere, you know, people can tell if it's something coming from Italy and there are some verb tenses that are incorrect, you know.
Well, yeah. Well, there's that, but there's also just the different spellings.
Yes.
Right. We have American English is weird.
Yeah. In that
it's like gone its own way.
Lots you know? Of Z's for some reason.
Yeah. Well, and you know, just like, you know, the OR versus OUR, like, mm-hmm. you know, flavor or color.
Yep.
You know, those are different in Canada, UK, Australia, New Zealand, they are here in the US. So just like things like that to kind of regionalize things to your point makes a lot of sense. So what else?
Besides hiring us, what else could they do?
Well, you know, it's important, like I said, to make sure that you have a presence here in the U.S. It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to have a permanent presence here. Like, there are actually quite a number of international producers, especially like for Bordeaux or Champagne, for instance, who have local representation in the U.S. They have a U.S. office.
Yeah.
You know, sales office, marketing office, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You know, not everybody can afford to do that, but, you know, for those that do, you absolutely see the impact that it has, you know, in more placements, in more recognition, you know, and frankly, in higher sales volumes than if you didn't have a presence here. Now, let's say you can't have a permanent presence here. Again, that goes back to the agency where we have permanent presence here.
Yeah.
And then also, you know, just making sure that, you know, once COVID is over, hopefully we'll be able to travel more, that just kind of being here, you know, come for several weeks, come for a month, you know, a couple times a year so that you can actually have a presence here and that people will start to recognize your commitment to the market. I mean, that really is what it comes down to, is that, you know, distributors and importers will pay attention to you if you are committed to helping them in the market.
Yeah. If you come in and it's really important to you to be here and to make the U.S. a priority, then that makes a difference.
Yeah. And frankly, you know, if you hire a local agency, that also helps you get that distribution because it demonstrates to importers, distributors that you are committed to the market, that you're making the investment Mm-hmm. Right. And so, you know, for instance, like public relations, you know, they want to know that you're sending out samples and getting scores and getting reviews. They want to know that you're advertising. They want to know what kind of social digital programs you're working on, because that all helps them.
I mean, contrary to popular belief, PR does help sales.
Yeah. It's one of those things where, you know, it's hard to track.
It's
hard to track directly.
So much tangible.
Yeah. But right. there are a lot of intangibles, you know, when it comes to that. And over time, you know, it's one of those things that builds over time. The more reviews you get, the more scores you get, the more people are talking about it, it starts to penetrate into the psyche of your potential customers.
It's snowball.
You know, yeah. I mean, there's an old adage that you have to connect with somebody like 9 or more times in order for them to actually make a purchase decision. So, mm-hmm. You know, the more that you can get in front of them through various means, various channels, the more likely you are to score more clients and customers. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. So, to our international friends and colleagues, we hope this has been useful to you. If there's any other questions or you'd like us to discuss any other particular topics on air, please let us know. You can get a hold of us at mike@htbpodcast.com or emma@htbpodcast.com. Also, don't forget to like and subscribe. And you can find us at htbpodcast.com on the web. And of course, on social, we're at htbpodcast. So thanks again for listening, Emma. Yeah. Always a pleasure.
Always.
And we will talk to you next time.
Bye.
This has been Hit the Bottle, a production of Balzac Communications and Marketing. You can find past episodes on our website at htbpodcast.com. Drop us a line on social at htbpodcast or send us an email to mike@htbpodcast.com or emma@htbpodcast.com. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen. If you like this show, please rate and review in any of the mentioned platforms. Thank you for joining us. Have a great day.